Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I am Mike Lupica, MLB.com and the New York Daily News.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and this is the Sports Reporters Podcast, setting up a very big weekend in professional football. We will talk about the Hall of Fame voting and the last chance opportunities, perhaps, for two of the biggest names in the history of the game, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens.
I thought Billy Wagner and Todd Helton. Okay, go ahead. Fine.
But first, we want to begin with the football games coming up this weekend, which should be great. Should be a really interesting Sunday. And we start in Los Angeles, where stop us if you've seen this show before. But the Rams and the 49ers will play for a third time this season. And the 49ers have won the last six games, and I believe it's nine of the last 11. If ever a team has had another team's number, it would be the 49ers against the Rams. And yet, somehow, people feel, well, that could be the perfect setup for Los Angeles to finally flip the script, provided that all the tickets have not already gone to 49ers fans and it doesn't sound like they're playing in a foreign stadium. Do we think that the Rams somehow, who feels like just a blink ago, lost this game when they really needed to win it to the 49ers, who also really needed to win it, can they reverse the trend?
Yeah, I think they can, Mitch. You can go broke right now betting against the San Francisco 49ers, and who have been exactly what we... Mitch, when do we start talking about them being the toughest out? After they reverse that bad start, okay, and show that they don't need a great quarterback to win big football games. Would I bet? If I actually betting my money, would I bet on the Rams? Yes, I would. They're playing at home, and they're coming off a big win, even though they tried to give it back to touchdown Tom and the Bucks. Listen, I love this game, okay? I love this day, by the way. It's like Saturday at the Final Four, the semifinal Saturday at the Final Four, okay? But I love this rivalry. I mean, this is one of the great rivalries. I mean, it's occurred out there. It's one of the great rivalries in the history of this sport, except when the Rams went to St. Louis. This is a very cool way to set up the last team that'll go to the Super Bowl.
You know, damn it, Michael, as often happens over the course of our relationship, you trumped me. I was about to mention that the thing that I'm most fascinated by about is that this is old school NFL that I grew up with. This is Y.A. Tittle and Joe Perry and Hugh McElhaney against Norm
right,
Van Brockman
right?
and Jaguar
yep.
John
right.
Yarnett
yep.
And Tom Fears. This is Crazy Legs Hirsch. These are all names that were dotted the rivalry in the 50s. This is one of the long-standing great rivalries in all of the league, and maybe in all of sport. Two cities that it's so diametrically opposed in so many ways, and these teams have reflect that historically. Oh, I think it's a wonderful matchup, and now on the field, I am picking the Rams. I just think it's all coming together. They put all their chips on the table. They spent all that money, and it's starting to bear fruit. I think they're going to win.
Well, the Rams have been a touch point for the 49ers season, all season long. If you go back and look at it, the 49ers started 3-5. 3-5. They got blown out by Arizona 31-17 to go 3-5. And everybody said they're done. And why don't they just put Trey Lance in there for good, get rid of Jimmy Garoppolo, they're finished. Who did they get better against? The Rams.
Yeah.
The Rams. That was the start of their three-game winning streak and what turned out to be seven out of the next nine games. They started with a 31-10 blowout of the Rams, who to that point, remember, had been everybody's darling, and it was the Matthew Stafford rejuvenation tour, and they were like, all he needed to do was get out of Detroit and look at how they're gonna run away with it. And that was the beginning of the decline for the Rams. So right from the beginning, the 49ers and Rams stories have been tied together. That was a 31-10 victory. Garoppolo had 182 yards. You know, he was Garoppolo. Debo Samuel had nearly 100 yards on the ground. They then went on to win a ton of games and found themselves in a finale against the Rams, where once again, the Rams game was signature for their season. If they don't win, they don't make the playoffs. What do they do? We all remember that game, 27-24 in overtime. in a game the Rams had no business losing and lost anyhow. Garoppolo throws for 316 yards. Brandon Ayuk ends up having a big game receiving. And they go into the playoffs with a ton of inertia and end up knocking off the Cowboys and end up knocking off the Green Bay Packers, who everybody thought was the best team in football. So it would not be surprising if to make the Super Bowl now, the third kind of the triangles in their season, that the 49ers do it again against the Los Angeles Rams.
By the way, Mitch, there's a booster you can take for inertia now. I don't know if you know that. It's just
it's the inertia variant.
Yeah. Now, hey, listen. Let's talk about the quarterbacks for a second, okay? Because this is fascinating matchup. Because nobody would dispute the fact that Mitch's friend Matthew Stafford has been a way better NFL quarterback than Jimmy Garoppolo has, right? Except Jimmy Garoppolo might be about to go to his second Super Bowl in, what, four years, right?
Yep.
Whenever they played the Chiefs, okay? And he might be one of those guys. We talked about this the other day, like a point guard in basketball. His stats weren't great, but his team won the game. And that's been Garoppolo. He makes just enough plays for them to win the game. Again, would I pick Stafford? Yes, all of the things they've done, Mitch and Bob. I mean, pretty much all of the things they've done have brought them to this moment. Matthew Stafford, Odell Beckham Jr., Von Miller, on and on and on and on. And here they all are. And they as much as I love Devontae Adams, they got the guy who's the best receiver on the planet right now in Cooper Kupp. And if Garoppolo can find enough passes to Deebo Samuels or maybe just enough handoffs, they can win this game. But you got to think that just at that position, the Rams have a big edge.
The current raging narrative among all the cognoscenti is you've got to have a quarterback. You can't go anywhere. All right, fine, we know. And the better quarterback will win. And Mike, you're right again. You've got to have a quarterback, yes. He doesn't have to be the greatest quarterback in the world. He has to be good enough. And Garoppolo has proven, I think, that he is
Bob,
good.
And Bob, think of it. They always say, all you got to do is not turn the ball over. Except Garoppolo, he does turn the ball over, but it doesn't kill his team dead.
You mentioned the great, I won't call it an X factor. You mentioned a great component that gives San Francisco a chance every time they take the field. And a man with whom I am personally infatuated now, and the reason why I'm kind of rooting for them, is Deebo Samuel.
Oh, my God.
He's become the most electrifying. In a world that includes Tyreek Hill, this guy is the most electrifying player in football. How's that?
Well, yeah, he is, and he'll have to be key. But I'm Matthew Stafford threw two interceptions in the game that they lost to the 49ers back in November. He threw two interceptions in the game that they lost to the 49ers on January 9th. He cannot throw two interceptions in this game here, or they're going to lose. He's been perfect with the ball in terms of turning it over since the playoffs started. And he's going to need to be perfect again, because we can talk about the quarterbacks all we like, and there's a ton of offensive talent between Cooper Kupp and Deebo Samuel and Kittle and all the rest of them. But this game will be won or lost on the line. The defensive front of the 49ers, the defensive front of the Rams against the people who are trying to protect their quarterbacks and keep their running backs from getting stuffed in the backfield. That's where this game will be decided. And the names Bosa and Donald and Miller and the like are going to be more important, I believe, than the name Stafford or Garoppolo, because they will determine the flow of this thing.
Yeah,
and they will
agree with you. This game may be decided, and it's always fun to talk about quarterbacks. Obviously, it's the most fun conversation in sports. Okay.
Right.
But it may come down to whose name we hear more on Sunday, Bosa, Miller, Donald, okay? And I think they are going to leave a huge footprint on this game and maybe a footprint on the backs of some of the guys either catching the ball or carrying the ball or trying to throw the ball, okay? Because Von Miller, Mitch, weren't we just talking about this a couple of days? I mean, Von Miller finally showed up. Finally showed up. I mean, we weren't talking. Donald's supposed to be the best defensive player on the planet and had not been for a great bit, right, Bob? And but Mitch, for the great big chunk of this season.
He had great plays. He didn't have great games.
Right.
Now he's been having great games. And that 40, look, the 49ers are where they are because of that defensive front. Okay, as much as we love Debo Samuel and all the rest of it, if they don't play the defense that they play and put the pressure on the quarterbacks that they have, we're talking about Aaron Rodgers now. Okay, look at who they just shut down. I mean,
who couldn't handle their pressure, right?
Yeah.
Who could not handle the pressure put on in him in the pocket.
That's right. And why are we talking about the LA Rams? Because their front got to Tom Brady. The two best quarterbacks in the game, bar none, unless you want to make a case for Patrick Mahomes, I still think is still Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. And both were defeated by the defensive fronts of the two teams who are playing right now. So it only makes sense to talk about their defensive front against the others and the pressure that they're going to be able to put on both of these quarterbacks who are both susceptible to throwing picks when they're forced to make a fast decision or try to get rid of the ball or dump it out before they get sacked.
With all this cogent analysis, gentlemen, you're probably next going to tell me that you can't fumble four times and expect to win. And, and I, my point I'm leading to here is that I don't care if it's us. I don't care if it's Dan Orlovsky. I don't care if it's who is deemed to be the greatest perceptive analyst in the history of football. How many times did we come away after watching these games and something stupid or inexplicable or bizarre happened to change the course of events? And one of which would be what I just said. Nobody would ever have agreed that you could fumble four times in a game of that nature and win, and yet they did. It's still...
Yeah, well, last weekend was just a freak weekend, period. I mean, who thinks that you're going to beat the Green Bay Packers by not getting the 20 points? I mean, it was all weird stuff. But I'll tell you this, if the Rams jump out to a 17-point lead, don't leave your television set, okay? Because it doesn't mean anything. Look at the leads that they had, and they were up 17-0 against the 49ers, remember? And lost that game 27-24 in overtime. And how big was their lead against the Bucks? Was it 27-3 at one point?
27-3. Tom almost came back from 27-3 the way he did 28-3 in a Super Bowl one time.
Right. So don't leave. It's quite possible that if the Rams go up by about 20 points, the 49ers coach will say, we got them right where we want them. Okay? Blow the game.
Except, Mitch, the 49ers quarterback, even though he did back Tom up once, is not Tom. So I don't think that's a template for success to dig a big hole for. All right. Let me ask you guys this. Okay? And by the way, a reminder that we're sponsored by Geico, as always. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. We talked about defensive guys. Donald, are we going to hear his name more? Are we going to hear Von Miller's name more? Are we going to hear Bosa's name more? Debo Samuel, Cooper Kupp, Odell Beckham Jr. Okay, let's just those three names. And I'll throw in George Kittle. Okay, which one of those guys do you think is going to be the game changer on offense on Sunday?
I don't know how you can.
Saying, which one do you think, which one of those guys do you think will be most talking about on Monday?
Well, Debo Samuel, you would you would suspect. I mean, if just if you're not in the prediction business, you know, with a crystal ball, but you just want to look at stats, because he can kill you so many different ways.
Yes,
I mean, he can run the ball on you. He can catch the ball on you. He could probably throw the ball on you. He does. You know, Cooper Kupp is only as good as Matthew Stafford getting him the ball. I mean, and Stafford has to be able to find him. Has to be able to put it anywhere near him. He'll make the play, but it's still dependent on Stafford. Debo Samuel, you just hand the ball to, and no matter how Jimmy Garoppolo is playing, he can be a factor in the game. So it's a question again of, can the defense shut down a powerhouse like him? You know, the LA defense did a good job in shutting down, for the most part in the game, the offensive weapons that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had. You know, no less a tight end than Rob Gronkowski did not have a particularly good game against the Rams. And they were able to, you know, I mean, obviously it was a tight game and they allowed them to come all the way back. But they, you know, in the end they prevailed. And they, Mike and Bob, I just keep saying the same thing. When you've lost to the same team, you can't bury the lead of this series. When you've lost to the same team six straight times, does that mean you just can't beat them, or does that mean the odds are totally in your favor because nobody beats somebody seven straight times?
Well, yeah, but Mitch, there's the Matthew Stafford Rams, okay, and then there's the Jared Goff Rams. That's why I think we just have to limit it to what we saw on the field this season. I don't think last season is relevant to this particular conversation because the Rams are different now. I mean, they're just completely different. Even Cooper Kupp, as great as he is, he's so much better now than he was. So. Do well, you guys?
Point.
And that's all I'm saying about the Rams. This is
it's two in a row instead of six in a row.
Yeah, whether it's a game of this magnitude in the playoffs, or whether it's a game on December, I'll pick a date, 15th, as opposed to, you know, October 31st. The fact is that you only have to talk about what's going on now, and teams evolve. We talked about how San Francisco had the terrible start. Here they are. We talked about how a little bit roller coaster of the Rams. Here they are. Yeah, and they're coming off playing. You know,
hey, and Bob, I'll tell you what. Okay, they both had great wins last weekend. The 49ers win was even better than the Rams win against Brady in Tampa, without question. I mean, Lambeau Field was Saturday night, snow falling, and they went in and beat their ass.
Yeah, well, you know,
it's hard. It's hard to say which game gives which team more confidence. If you go on the road and beat the defending Super Bowl champions, or you go on the road and beat the Packers in the snow at Lambeau by scoring 13 points. You know, both teams have to feel like, hey, this is our season of destiny.
Yeah, right.
They both take that. We should point out that, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo's performance last week was 11 for 19 without a touchdown, one interception. The team won the game. He didn't win the game. And that was just a freak win. The defense, the special teams were ridiculous. The special teams aren't going to have that kind of week this week, the odds would suggest. I would say that of the two performances, it was more impressive what the Rams did, because the Rams, you know, scored a ton of points against a team that didn't give up a lot and held Tom Brady in check for 2/3 of the game, which doesn't often happen. And even when they came back by dint of their own mistakes, as Bob pointed out, putting the ball on the ground four times, they still came back in the final minute and won it. That was less of a freak show than the 49ers game, which was just, it was freakish. Whenever special teams win games by blocking punts and running them into the end zone or stuff like that, it's freak stuff. You don't count on that happening the following week.
You know, with regard to the Garoppolo statistics, gentlemen, now we all, and I mean not just us, everybody loves referencing Brady's performance in the comeback against the Rams, the 28-3 the 28-3 game. Check out his numbers in many other of his Super Bowls. How else can you be talking about in this way his many other Super Bowls? But the fact is that he won Super Bowls on afternoons or early evenings just like that for the reasons that you just cited. It's a team effort. There were games, one, you know, whether it's interception returns or kick great field goals by Vinatieri or Gronkowski. His performances in some of these games was quite average, and he gets all the credit. He's got all the rings, and But, you know, it wasn't the full story in many of those days.
You know, it's funny, Bob. When I looked, I just looked up Brady's stats in that 13-3 Super Bowl against the Rams, okay? Mm-hmm. He actually had more passing yards than I thought. I thought they were going to be Garoppolo-like numbers. He was 21 for 35 with 262, one pick. And you know, again, that was a day. And maybe to get out of this conversation, this game may come down to what happened that day, which was when he had to make that throw to Gronk. He made that throw to Gronk.
Yep.
Speaking All right, it's going to be a great game. And is the first game? No, is it the first game?
No, it's second. Second.
It's the good. Good. They're saving it for last. The first game will be Kansas City and Cincinnati, which is really a whole different dynamic. Again, a reminder before we talk about this that we are brought to you by our friends at Geico. Hey, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. But you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing because you already have so much to do around your home. So go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Okay, Kansas City, Cincinnati. This is an interesting game for a whole different reason. This is not a matchup that we see multiple times a year and goes back a long way. This is definitely the upstart team against a team that for all of its Sturm und Drang over the course of the season, it's the fourth straight time that they've been in this game. They have a Super Bowl win under their belts. They have a Super Bowl loss under their belts. And now they are facing... they are facing the version of what they used to be, which was, you know, the young upcoming team. Now they're the established team. Can Joe Burrow, and I do think in this case we can talk about the quarterbacks, because Joe Burrow doesn't have a great game, Cincinnati doesn't have a chance. I don't think there's any scenario that you can think of how Cincinnati's not doing what San Francisco did, winning on a special teams or something. Joe Burrow needs to have an amazing game, needs to be connecting with Ja'Marr Chase and the other talents on his team. And can they pull off an upset against, I think it's 7 points, which is a big spread for a championship game.
That tells you
against Kansas City at home in Kansas City.
Maybe they're going to have to protect him way better than they did against the Titans.
Oh, really?
I mean, I would like to go back and find out. You know, we'll put Tyler Brewer on.
Nine the sacks, last... you mean? Yeah, they can't give up nine sacks.
No, no. Mitch, think about it. Think about it. Has there ever been a time when a quarterback got sacked 9 times in a postseason game and his team still ended up winning that game? For the life of me, I can't remember somebody taking that kind of pounding and still winning the game. And you know that Steve Spagnuolo of the Chiefs is going to come after him with everything. And there's going to be some elements of this game where does Burrow, in the face of that rush and in the face of that blitz of the moment, have time to find Ja'Marr Chase?
Yeah. And not to mention the hits and the hurries after the over and above the sacks.
Well, I love that football. Did you hear that, Mitch? Hits and
the
hurries.
Hits and the hurries.
I love that. I love when he goes wonky on us, don't you?
The hits and the hurries.
Gentlemen, don't we all agree, we'll be – I don't know. I won't say pleasantly. I don't know how you feel about any rooting interest in this game, but you'll be quite surprised if the Chiefs don't prevail.
This would be an upset of either team can win that NFC matchup, and nobody should be surprised. But this would be a major upset, and you would talk about a turnaround from where Cincinnati was 2 years ago to the Super Bowl. This, in some ways, you want this to happen only because it will give hope to franchises all across the country who have been perennially down. Even Detroit Lions fans might draw.
Did you have one in mind in particular?
Yeah, I have one in mind. I have one in my back pocket.
Yeah.
And, I think that kind of turnaround, to have several drafts in a row where you get to pick really high and picking the right guys and then supporting him. But we all talk about Joe Burrow and we all talk about Ja'Marr Chase, and you should. We should talk about them a lot because they're phenomenal. But the Cincinnati defense is going to have to prevail, and the Cincinnati defense is not as unaccomplished as perhaps you might think. Trey Hendrickson and Devon Bell and Wilson, Bates, even Eli Apple. I always look, if you can get Eli Apple to turn into a good player, you must be doing something right, because he's failed at a number of other spots where he's been. They're not bad. Can they, you know, force Patrick Mahomes into mistakes? I don't know. Mahomes is playing kind of in his zone right now. And even when you put pressure on him, sometimes he's better. And, you know, I think it's going to have a lot to do with just tackling right and not missing tackles, not yards after catch and stuff like that.
All right, listen, I agree with both of you. I will be surprised if the Bengals win this game. But the Bengals lost one more game during the regular season than the Buffalo Bills did, okay? The Bengals have Joe Burrow. The Buffalo Bills have Josh Allen, okay? There's no question that the Buffalo Bills have a better defense than the Bengals do, but not so much that you can't have a conversation about it. So we would not have been shocked going in if the Bills had ended up beating the Chiefs last Sunday. And I think these are both young teams. I'm talking about the Bills and the Bengals. And so would I be surprised if they win this game? Yes. Would I be shocked if they win the game after what I saw from them at their best this season? No, because that was a hell of a win. I know it, Tannehill and all that other stuff. That was a hell of a win they had against the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, yeah.
We also can't forget the fact, and this is an important thing, that these two teams played each other not that long ago, and Cincinnati won.
It's the only thing that's standing between the Chiefs and what, Mitch? An 11-game winning streak. Think about the momentum we'd be talking about with the Chiefs if they hadn't lost that game. And they would have ended up with home field, they're going to get it anyway now in the championship game. No, that was a huge game at the time.
Huge game. Joe Burrow threw for 446 yards and four touchdowns. So it is not, I mean, not that Cincinnati was lacking confidence anyhow. They're a pretty cocky team.
Yeah, aren't they?
Have every reason to be confident against this particular team because they just beat them. Relatively recently. So, I mean, when was that game? I think it was this year, wasn't it?
No, it was in December. Remember that the Bengals ended up running like 9 million plays from...
It was January, Mike.
Oh, it was January?
Yeah, it was the
was it
was New
last,
Year's weekend.
It was. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
It sounded like Tony Romo then. Wow, my gosh.
Kansas City, they leave you when they're at their best... with the weaponry that they have, they leave you with a such an indelible impression. You know, what am I thinking about as we sit here right now? I am remembering Hill's excursion into the end zone in that game last week. I'm remembering the Kelsey, although they are so damn good when they're good. You know, you wonder how they ever lose when they're at their best.
You do wonder how they ever lose, and yet they lose.
That has been the mystery
much of the season with Kansas City. And you just look, the only way I pick Cincinnati to win this game is if whatever plagued Kansas City in the midway point of the season somehow isn't totally out of their system. If it is, and if Patrick Mahomes is back to, you know, being the Zen master back there and it just doesn't get rattled and instead of trying to, you know, go for broke on certain plays, just takes the stuff over the middle and just keeps moving his team down the field. I don't see any way that Cincinnati, as talented as they are, keeps up with Kansas City in a team that scored 42 points the last two games that it's played in the playoffs, and somehow, you know, stays with them. But if they have that, man, what happened to the Chiefs? There's something weird going on. Remember, we were talking about that all the way. Look at all that talent.
And rightfully so, Mahomes was clearly not the same player he'd always been.
Right.
No, that was much of our...
I got one for you guys. Okay, Mitch is right. God, I can't believe that game was on January 2nd, Mitch, between the Bengals and the Chiefs. Other than that, the last time the Chiefs lost a game was October 24th. They've lost one game in 3 months.
Jeez.
How about that?
Yeah.
Well, Monday, you know, we could be sitting here saying, that's why you play the game, you know, thing. But, you know, that we know Cincinnati has the proverbial puncher's chance.
Guess what? It's great to have Mahomes playing like this again, Mitch and Bob. It's the sport is way more interesting when they're firing all symbols. I'm so happy that it was Kelce with all the other weapons they have who made that catch to win the game. And I mean, if I had to pick one of these four teams to win the Super Bowl, it's them.
Isn't that interesting? Because a week ago, you probably wouldn't have said that. And you had two teams that you could easily make a case for on the NFC side. And you had the Tennessee Titans, who were supposedly the best team in the AFC. And if they had somehow won their game, which they were supposed to, Kansas City would be on the road for this game. As well as Kansas City has played, and Mike, you point out, they haven't lost since October except that one loss to the Bengals, and yet they wouldn't have had home field throughout the playoffs. They would have had to go to Tennessee to play the game. So it just shows you week to week how things change. I never thought Tennessee was as good as their record ended up being, and I thought they got a lot of wins early on when they had Derrick Henry, and then they kind of struggled to stay on, and they weren't the same team again, even though they were a great team. But now Kansas City has reasserted itself as sort of the pride of the AFC and, belongs, I think, in the Super Bowl to represent the AFC.
Hard to make three Super Bowls in a row, too, Mitch. It's damn all hard. It's a hard league. You're right. Sunday to Sunday, it's hard to get a win in the middle of November, okay? It's just a hard damn lead. If they go back to the Super Bowl for the third year in a row, they did something.
And they're going to be favored. I can tell you that right now against either team coming out of the NFC.
Wait. All right, I agree with you, but what if, say, the Rams put it on the 49ers?
I still think Kansas City's favorite.
Okay.
Well, in other
one more thing before we switch to baseball in the Hall of Fame, okay?
Yeah.
Very interesting development. Before we came on the air today in the National Football League, Nathaniel Hackett, oh, by the way, the offensive coordinator for Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, has just been hired as the new HFC of the Denver Broncos. Let the chorus of people talking about Rodgers to the Broncos begin.
Oh, yeah. Well, Rodgers has just lapped the field as the personal newsmaker in football in the last 12 months, right?
It's a news cycle himself. Bob.
We wait every day for what this is like. It was with the POTUS. Once we moved, every morning you woke up. What's going to come out of the White House? Yeah. And every morning we wake up, and what's going to come out of Aaron Rodgers' mouth? This is fun. I mean, this is great. I mean, more Rodgers fodder. I love it. That's great.
Well, so Rodgers said, I got a parting shot on his comments about his vaccination thing, but football wise, he said he doesn't want to wait a long time to make his mind up because he wants to be fair to guys like Devontae Adams, who have to determine their own future. Now, Devontae Adams, who is 30 years old, is an unrestricted free agent now. Now, he could get stuck with the franchise tag, I believe. And if Green Bay gets a sense that, Hackett is going to Denver, he's going to come after Aaron Rodgers, and maybe he's going to come after Devontae Adams.
But that's going to be harder, Mitch. It's going to be harder. They've got Judy and they've got other receivers, and they would have profound cap issues if they tried to get Rodgers and Devontae Adams.
Well, unless they traded somebody or dumped somebody out, but stranger things have happened, and then it becomes a fight for assets. You know, now it's like, all right, we lost our offensive coordinator. You're not getting our quarterback, or you're not getting our receiver. Whatever. It's just going to be a really interesting mini off season. Again, if he doesn't take it to the nth degree, and I don't think he will. I think he's telling the truth about this, Rodgers, that he'll say I'm staying or I'm going. He may not choose another team, but he may say, I'm not coming back to Green Bay, and that'll inform Devontae Adams, and that'll inform everybody else. There are a couple places where he could go.
I got a question for you. If you're Aaron Rodgers, and you're looking at the quarterback field, the young quarterback field in the AFC, Do you really want to go play in the AFC?
True. Absolutely. And the other thing, Mike, is does he, and I don't know the answer to this, does he have more allegiance or connection with Hackett, his offensive coordinator, than he does with his head coach? I mean, he seems to get along quite well with his head coach.
No, he can't. He can't. No. But I think Aaron's allegiance right now is Jaron. So yeah. That's what I think.
Yeah. All right. It is time to talk some baseball here. And, Bob, why don't you set the table for us and the very interesting developments in the Hall of Fame voting?
It's a ballot that I know I long dreaded, and actually in one way dreaded it, and the other way I'm glad it's here and done with one way or the other, because looming over the ballot for going way back 15 years ago, and now they changed it that you don't have to wait 10 years, is of course the issue as to whether the greatest home run slugger documented in baseball history and arguably as good a starting pitcher has ever pitched would go into the Hall of Fame, and we all know the reason why they're not in the Hall of Fame. It was a tedious, awful, just miserable argument to be involved in. I hated it. I'm glad it's over right now for us. But let the argument, it's not over in the minds of the public.
All of this hand wringing that I see from baseball, and I'm not including you in this, okay? I'm simply not including you in this, okay? Here's my thing on that. Okay, why? I mean, you vote for who you vote for. I not once in my career did I ever say, oh, here's my Hall of Fame ballot, and here's why. No. It's like going into the voting booth. You vote, you move on. You make a determination. Do you think they cheated, or do you not think they cheated? It becomes murkier with Ortiz because of an anonymous survey 19 years ago of which he has been absolved by the commissioner of baseball. Okay, now that may have been a business decision. All I'm saying, if that's all you got, you put that up against what you saw from Barry Bonds over the second half of his career. Okay, and what you saw, Gene Michael once said about baseball pitchers, your fastball's not supposed to get better after the age of 35. Okay, so I believe those two guys poisoned the record book. So I don't think this is a big emotional decision. Mitch, before I throw this over to you, let me just say one other thing that amuses the hell out of me at this time of year. The people who want to vote for Bonds and Clemens accuse the people who don't of moralizing. Except that the people who vote for Bonds and Clemens are doing their own moralizing about the people they say are moralizers.
This issue, you can't be on the, what is it in roulette? There's red and black and then there's one green, you know. You can't be on the one green on this. You're on one side of it or on the other. There's no neutral. You either think that it is cheating and it ruined the game and it must absolutely count against you, or you think, well, we have to allow for the time and, you know, there are different eras and that was a steroid era and that's the stance that you take. I think if you look at the totality of guys who have been accused of PEDs who were Hall of Fame worthy, you do see a pattern. David Ortiz, as you pointed out, just got elected to the Hall of Fame. He failed one drug test in a what has then now become a disputed test with some anonymous results. As you point out, the commissioner of baseball himself absolved him. He gets in. Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, who technically never actually, correct me if I'm wrong, because you know this stuff better than I do, but technically never actually failed drug tests or admitted anything, right? Each of them gets 66 and 65% Bonds, Clemens, respectively. Guys like Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire, even though Sammy Sosa has been a denier for a long time, but Mark McGwire, they even come close with their votes, even though their numbers certainly would have put them in the Hall of Fame. Alex Rodriguez, who missed an entire season because of this stuff, just got on the ballot and went down at 135 votes, 34%. He doesn't look like he's going to stand a chance of ever making it. So there seems to be a pattern to, hey, if you have been booked, fingerprinted, and convicted, you're not getting in. If you've been booked, fingerprinted, but let off, we're going to give you a good percentage of votes, but you're not going to ultimately get in. And if you were booked, fingerprinted, but then had your record expunged, David Ortiz, then you can get in. There seems to be a pattern there.
But here's
right?
here's the one part of it. There's many elements to this conversation. The one that is a bunch of hooey is this. Well, they didn't like Bonds. Oh, okay. But writers loved Eddie Murray. Who treated the media like crap. And Steve Carlton didn't even talk to the media. Okay, so why didn't that keep him out of the Hall of Fame? Mitch, it's the old Marx Brothers line. Who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes? Ryan talks all the time about the eye test in sports in different areas other than this. Okay, you know what Barry Bonds did. Barry Bonds got pissed because of the attention that McGuire and Sosa were getting in 1998, and he said, I'm way better than both of them, and he was going to hit home runs. And by God, he hit home runs. But just, Mitch, go back and look at the 1992 Barry Bonds and look at the guy who and what he looked like the night he broke Hank Aaron's record.
Guys, I'm very repetitive on this, but we have this forum. I'm going to use it one more time. I just think there's such a simple solution. It frustrates me so terribly that it won't be implemented. This is a private museum. This is not owned by baseball. This is a private museum that is affiliated with baseball. They can do with it what they want. They could solve this easily. They have all they need to do is issue a disclaimer before as you go into the room where the plaques are, and something to the effect that there was a period of time in which baseball, where performance-enhancing drugs were rampant. Many of the people you will see in this room performed during that era. We have instructed our voters to vote strictly on the accomplishments and the numbers and nothing else. And then that's it. Then they go in.
Let me ask you a question.
What is so hard about that?
All right, let me ask you a question. And before I do, I want to remind everybody that we're sponsored by Harry's. No matter what you resolve to do this year, from getting better at budgeting to just trying to look your best every day, Harry's can help. Harry's award-winning razors and their full line of grooming essentials all stick to the original resolution Harry's was founded on. No one should have to choose between an incredible shave and a fair price. What amazes me about Harry's is how long their blades stay sharp, and I have been them for years since they were on my radio show. In a recent study, guys who shave four times a week or more like I do, I don't know how they knew that about me, said their eighth shave was as smooth as their first, for under $2 a blade, too. And right now, it's the best time to ever give them a try. I promise you, I just had to send a Harry's care package off to my youngest son in California because he left his shaving gel and his bomb behind. But he'll have them by the end of the week. Harry's is giving their best offer to our listeners. Now, new Harry's customers can redeem a starter set. You get a 5-blade razor, a weighted handle, foaming shave gel, oh yeah, that had to go too, with aloe, and a travel cover to protect your blades when you're on the go. That's a $13 value for just $3. There's truly never been a better time to try Harry's. Go to harrys.com/reporters to try Harry's today. We're all just wild about Harry's. Bob, let me ask you a question. What's your reaction when you, and you're one of the people who says it, we need more guidance on this. Why? Why do we need more guidance? You either accept, there are many qualifications to get in the Hall of Fame, and one of them is the character clause, okay? Do you think they cheated? Yes or no? Do you think they cheated? Okay.
But people I respect, many people that and acquaintances and friends of both of ours who make their living basically following baseball and care deeply about it as I do, and have adopted a different viewpoint on it.
And Bob Costas.
Wait. What's their different viewpoint?
The viewpoint isn't that they cheated, but they were Hall of Famers
anyway. Right, Bob? Would you say that's a fair way to say it?
Yeah,
they cheated, but they were already Hall of Famers.
That's just one argument. That's not the argument. That's one of the arguments that's being put forth by many people. No, what the people are saying, what I am alluding to, is the posture that the Museum of Baseball, the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, should reflect the entire history of baseball, and that these people accomplished what they accomplished, and however they did it is not relevant, and also it's because we can't prove, we do not know how many juice pitchers pitched to whom, how many juice batters. We don't know. We suspect certain people with stronger evidence than others. People have made their judgments about borderline people, myself included, that I voted for, that other people think should not be included. But that's the argument, guys, that it should reflect. Any museum of baseball that does not acknowledge the home run king and a guy like Clemens, and Pete Rose, another matter, because that's about gambling, which we can talk about that some other day, and why there's he should be in now, even though I've been against it for 30 years. That's the argument, guys, and well, I have to respect that argument.
Bob,
but despite assessing that argument,
point.
I voted against these guys, or I didn't put them on the ballot.
You make a good point if you choose to view it as a museum. When you say it that way, I think anybody who's listening says, yeah, if that's all it really is, it's a museum. A museum is a display of former things, frequently dead things. And why shouldn't you include every element of excellent performances and just explain it away? But the fact is, it has not been treated like a museum. It's been treated like a career reward by the voters, who you could make a very good argument are a little too precious about all of this. And when Roger Clemens says, I stopped thinking about the Hall of Fame 10 years ago, you know, it doesn't matter, it's a bunch of media people and blah, blah, blah. I'm sure that that's the position that many athletes or many baseball players take when they feel slighted by it and just say, well, after all, what is it? It's a bunch of writers, a bunch of media people deciding on careers of players having never played the game themselves. But the fact is, when this vote comes around, you don't hear it positioned as a new exhibit at the museum will be put in for...
Right.
You hear it's like he made the Hall of Fame, and guys cry, and they put on the jacket, and they make the speeches, and they talk. It is a career award for what you did, and whether you choose to talk about it as museum or not, that's not the way it's generally perceived.
Do you believe Roger Clemens?
All right, I got one more.
By the way, do you believe Roger Clemens for 1 second? I don't.
No,
I lived with him.
Oh, no, you don't believe Schilling either.
Forget that crap.
Okay, let's just transition before we get to parting shots, okay? I think the issue of Curt Schilling is way more complicated than a couple of guys who I think were drug cheats, because his beliefs... Now, and again, we can have a conversation. Bob, as great a postseason pitcher as Curt Schilling was, when you grade him against the curve of starting pitchers who made it, he was just slightly above being a borderline candidate. That's what I believe. You may believe something differently.
I know. I think you phrased it properly.
Okay. But as a postseason pitcher, he's off the hook. Okay. But his hideous beliefs clearly kept him out of the Hall of Fame. And I just wonder what people think about that as opposed to Bonds and Clemens.
No, I wish you said it's complicated. You're right. It is. I'm not positive that's the case, because he was so borderline to start
with. But he fell back, Bob. He fell back.
He did.
I know
he
said stop voting for
me. You're right. He went from 71. Mike, you're right. He went from 71 to 58. So in the end, the latest... blast. But that's after we told people not to vote for him, which only made me more determined to vote for him. Because I'm serious, because I don't want him going around saying, I don't want to be involved in any discussion of his in which he thinks he was being slighted because of his political or his nonsensical beliefs, because I want to keep it to baseball. And I was not, no, the people should have doubled down. If you were going to vote for him, vote for him. Don't give him that
Mitch,
satisfaction.
I wouldn't give him that satisfaction.
I don't understand the drop. Okay, granted, he himself requested to be taken off the ballot. Okay, and you know, that's going to make voters think a certain way. But then he asked for writers not to vote for him as well. So maybe they were just granting him his wish.
Yeah, but Mitch, I'm talking about the year before. Okay, the year before,
yes,
clearly,
he was at 71%,
when he was sitting
right?
on the, you know, he was knocking on the door, okay? And I believe he would have gone through the door if it had not been for the things he'd said and the things he tweeted.
In my view, Mike, those things should not keep you out of baseball's Hall of Fame. He did not do anything to break the rules of the game. He had far right political tweets and advocated for journalists to be lynched and was involved in Nazi memorabilia and had the video game mess up thing in Rhode Island that cost him a lot of money and all. And none of that has anything to do with baseball. And he wouldn't be the first asshole to be elected into the Hall of Fame. In this case, if he got to 71% and was, you know, going to be one of those players that, we're just making you kind of wait it out, but we're going to put you in on the last ballot, then he should have been put in. If he was close enough to get 71% in terms of his baseball accomplishments, then my guess is he was probably close enough to get in. And this turnaround and dropping him all the way down to, how low did he get on this? 58%.
Yeah.
I mean, he dropped off, you know, almost 14 points. just because of his political views?
No, I think we're people honoring this wish, which I refuse to do.
Okay. That's what makes it complicated.
Mitch, here's the thing, and when you look at Curt Schilling, all I can say is these are human beings voted, okay, and people bring their own beliefs the way they do when they close the curtain on election day, okay. But if you're close and you are a borderline candidate, if I'm him. And he couldn't do it. I'd keep my mouth shut because if he'd kept his mouth shut and he'd kept some of these hideous beliefs to himself, I do believe he would have gotten in.
Yeah.
Well.
So there you have it.
It's funny because there's more to talk about when the guys who didn't make it than the guys who did. And we've spent all this time talking, and we just mentioned Ortiz, and we spent all the rest of the time talking about guys who didn't make it. It's a sad state of affairs. All right, this week's parting shots are brought to you by Harry's. Right now, new Harry's customers can redeem a starter set. You get a 5-blade razor, a weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, and a travel cover to protect your blades when you're on the go. That's a $13 value for just $3. There's truly never been a better time to try Harry's. Go to harrys.com/reporters to try Harry's today. Time for our parting shots, and Mike Lupica lead us off.
Now, parting shots.
Everything that finally brought David Ortiz to Cooperstown the other night really began across four nights in October in 2004 when Ortiz and the Red Sox came from 3-0 down against the Yankees and changed Red Sox history, Yankees history, baseball history, and even sports history with the greatest comeback of them all. And it really began in the bottom of the 12th of Game 4 when Ortiz hit a bottom of the 12th home run against Paul Quantrill and kept the Red Sox season alive. Then he knocked in Johnny Damon in the bottom of the 14th the next night. The rest is history, theirs and his. He was the Boston Babe Ruth, without question, of this generation. The Red Sox won 3 World Series once with the other Babe, and then they won 3 with Poppy. Babe took the World Series with him when he left Boston for New York. Big Poppy brought it back.
This just in, the Cleveland Cavaliers, otherwise known as the best-kept secret in the NBA, passed the Bucks in the standings last night. Now, their coach is J.B. Bickerstaff, a guy who was paid his dues. I don't know him personally, but I knew his dad, Bernie, and if he's anything like him, I know the Cavs are in good shape. They have the leading Rookie of the Year candidate in Evan Mobley. They have a fine guard in Darius Garland. Oh, and they're doing it without the guy who may be their best player, Colin Sexton, out for the season. And guess who had 25 points last night? Yep, Kevin Love.
Yep.
Forgot about him, didn't you? The whole team has been an afterthought since LeBron left that second time, but now attention must be paid.
Aaron Rodgers may not have an explanation for why his team lost to San Francisco last week, but he claims to know why some fans were rooting for it. Rodgers went on the Pat McAfee show and claimed, quote, "There were a ton of people tuning in, rooting against us for one reason and one reason only. It's because of my vaccination status and them wanting to see us lose so they could pile on." Well, as someone who lives in Detroit, I can attest that plenty of people have rooted against Rodgers here, year after year, without any vaccination provocation. They root against him the way people root against Tom Brady or LeBron James, because he always wins. Because he knocks teams out with his talent. And when it happens in reverse, well, fans cheer it. Throw in his attitude about leaving Green Bay long before COVID became an issue, and there's reason for even more dislike. But ask yourself this, if there had never been a vaccine thing with Rodgers, would the reaction to the 49ers upsetting Green Bay be any different today? No. Truth is, there's plenty of reasons for people to root against Aaron Rodgers, long before a needle came into play. That's going to wrap it up for today's program. We do this twice a week, so we'll be back on Monday to wrap up the championship games in the NFL and see who's going to the Super Bowl. So that'll be a lot of fun. If you like what you heard, leave us a comment or leave us a rating. We always appreciate those. And tell your friends they can find this podcast on Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, any place you get popular podcasts. Until we see you on Monday, on behalf of Bob Ryan and Mike Lupica, I'm Mitch Albom saying have a great weekend.